on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Apologies for the 8 till 9 hour. Not apologies. You got to hear the best of the morning, the breakfast show for the week. But we had some technical issues up here at Winton, which is where I am for the third round of the Shannons Nationals. But we seem to have had those resolved now, which means I get to host this little hour between 9 and 10. And joining me back in the studio, so a very good morning to Troy Zanta. G'day, Zanners.
Great to be here, Shebex. Actually missing you, mate. There's empty chairs in the studio, but wow, round 12 proving a round of upsets in the AFL.
Yeah, it certainly is. Let's go straight to Brett Anderson and what's going to be a busy show for us. So we need to get straight into things very quickly. And from Essendon Inside Football, Brett Anderson joins us. Good morning, Brett.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you as always.
Good to, for you to be with us as well, mate. Thank you for your time on a Sunday morning. Let's go through the game so far because there's been some big results. And we'll kick it off with last night, I think, is probably the best way to start it with the game that's fresh in our minds. The Essendon-Port Adelaide game. What an amazing first half of footy from Essendon, and what a disappointing first half of footy from Port Adelaide.
They're amazing last night, the Bombers. And I think watching it, they've always got that in them. And it's sort of, I think when you play Essendon, Saturday night, Etihad Stadium, you have that thought that, oh, that this could be one of those nights where they really turn it on. And I thought from pretty much a minute into the game, all the hallmarks were there, and they were fantastic the way they moved the footy with speed, and they got it forward to their key forwards. So Port Adelaide's defenders this year have really done a good job. Like, they've batted well above their weight in many ways. Jonas, Homsch, and also Cleary. But last night, they were terribly outpointed by Hooker and Danaher, and then the smalls at ground level really got the better of them. But now the Bombers, that's their best is up there. Like, guys, their best is absolutely capable of matching it with anyone. It's just getting that consistency that's the issue for them.
And, Brett, just on Cale Hooker, he had an absolute night out and set the Bombers up with 5 goals. He really set the scene. They actually ambushed the Power in that first quarter. 7 goals, 6-1-3.
Yeah, they absolutely did, Zanis. That's right. And look, Hooker was the man, wasn't he? I guess there's been some questioning about where he should play his footy and where his best position is, but last night he sort of showed that that he's more than capable of playing forward, and I think he kicked 5-3-5 in the first half. Tom Cleary did a pretty good job on him in the second half, but the damage was well and truly done, and it just meant that everyone else sort of piled on and got in on the act. But, yeah, look, absolutely, the Bombers last night were fantastic, and it was one of those ones when the game was, about 15 minutes before the start of the game, and I had my tip in, and I wanted to change to Essendon, and I just didn't back myself in, and I was spewing about 10 minutes into the first quarter. I thought, oh, well, there's a lost tip gone. But, no, they were outstanding, the Bombers. Port Adelaide really disappointing. And, look, let's hope from their point of view that was a one-off because, yeah, that wasn't anywhere near acceptable defensively, the way that they were working backwards and moving forward too. They had no real system outside of early on. It was Robbie Gray or bust, and Robbie probably looked like he was going to kick 10 at one stage, but then the ball just didn't get down there.
And the interesting situation also with Joey Danaher, I should say, of course, from a few weeks ago when he was having that really bit of a lull in his footy. He wasn't able to kick any goals and all that sort of stuff. But the last couple of weeks, has he not turned it on?
Yeah, I'm glad the one week that he didn't have the radar on was against my mob. So that was a bonus because I think last year he might have kicked 5 or 6 straight, which was the rarity because he'd kicked plenty of points in and around that. But look, his form's been amazing. It's probably been since he's gone in and played a bit more ruck time as well. So to be able to go forward, he took some great contested marks last night. And his ability to find the ball at ground level, I think, is the thing that I really noticed. A few weeks ago against West Coast, I think he kicked 4 or 5, and 4 of them were from ground level play. Like, they weren't from mark and kick. His ability to find the footy when it's on the deck is really strong for a bloke who's 200 centimetres.
Just on ability to find the football, 38 possessions, Zach Merritt, an absolutely just a masterclass. His ball delivery has improved immensely from, say, 1 to 2 years ago. And I'd say Michael Hurley, boy, oh boy, he is back.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of Merritt, his first receive stuff is where he really excels. Like, he's not absolutely the coalface winning that first possession, but it's the first receive, the person who wins it then gives it to Merritt, and that's where he's really dangerous. And as you mentioned, his ball use is usually spot on, so teams really need to lock down on him. And look, Hurley's just, he goes from strength to strength. He's in the All-Australian frame there. And I think the thing that's really helped him again last night was Michael Hartley's ability to go and play on Charlie Dixon and do a really good job there. It meant that Hurley didn't have to go and play on the best forward, so he was able to float off and provide support when required. But also, he reads the play so well, so he can intercept and basically set them up from defence. So he's playing a really strong role, and I think John Worsfold's got him playing the perfect spot, a bit like Alex Rance. Rance doesn't always play on the best defender either. He's relying on Asprey to do it a bit more for Richmond. So they're playing very similar roles, Hurley and Rance.
So Essendon go into the eight with their 70-point victory over Port Adelaide. Fremantle drop out of the eight with their 57-point loss to the Brisbane Lions. And one must ask the question, how the hell were Fremantle in the eight in the first place?
Percentage tells the tale, boys. And when your percentage is 80 with six wins, I think it's the worst. They were the worst six-win team halfway through the year in modern history. And I actually tipped Brisbane last night. I thought they were good things against Freo after the Josh Shackey re-signing. Can you just give a group a bit more of a pump-up? And I don't think they've been that far off. And I think I mentioned this last week about Brisbane on the show. It might have been midweek. Just I think that they're not as bad as what everyone looks at. They'd only won the one game, but certainly some of their footy have been really impressive. They got Rockliffe back. Their midfield's really strong when you look at Beams, Rockliffe, Zorko. Zorko was amazing yesterday. So was Beams. Continues on his strong form. And I think when Hipwood gets a few kicks early on, his confidence gets right up, and he got a bit of the footy early on as well. But Freo, they were atrocious yesterday, and I think their percentage has dropped to 71 or something like that, which sort of tells the true tale in terms of where their season's at. They pinched a few wins where they might have been a bit lucky at times, and that's why they found themselves in the eight. But yesterday, Brisbane, full credit to them, and their kids were great too. Jared Berry, McCluggage had good days. Great result for Brisbane and Chris Fagan.
And also Harris Andrews, he's really developing into, a really good backman. He absolutely took McCarthy to the cleaners.
I was going to say the exact same thing, Zanners, when you brought it up. He absolutely did. He gave him a toweling. And some of his ability to just read the play better and mark it over the top of McCarthy were the things that really caught my eyes. He's a beauty, and I think they're big fans of him up there. And I think we've seen him gradually grow. And when he gets some more talent around him, and probably another key defender would be nice. Darcy Gardner's a little bit undersized to be continuing to play sort of that secondary role. When they get a bit more help for him down back, I think he's only going to flourish. So he's another good one that the Lions have got up there that I think a lot of supporters don't down here of other teams don't really get to see, but hopefully they saw a bit of him yesterday.
Alistair Clarkson must have walked under the ladder, killed a Chinaman, and also kicked a black cat all on the same day because Jewish Hawthorne are having some bad luck, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, they are. But I guess when you've got four flags in the bank, bad luck. I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Hawthorne supporter. I can sit back and watch the four DVDs of premierships in recent years. Look, yesterday, I thought Gold Coast were, especially with Hodge and Bruce going out, look, Gold Coast were one of the bets of the round. And look, for long periods, they looked that. And they had a bit of a lull in the last quarter. And I think there would have been a bit of tightening up in the coach's box with Rodney Eat, especially when they got within just over a goal, wasn't it, the Hawks in the final term with Gunston playing some really good footy. But in the end, Stephen May down back really controlled the game. And that's probably what they missed at the other end, Hawthorne, with Hodge being out. That person who can free himself up and control the game off half back. But Gary Ablett was pretty good again, boys.
He was, BA, 37 touches a game. But I was highly impressed with Witts. I thought it was his best game for Gold Coast. I think he controlled the centre bounces and was very good around the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ben McAvoy's had a really strong year. And there's been a couple of weeks recently where he's been well beaten. And I think Paddy Ryder got hold of him a couple of weeks ago. And now Jared Witts was one of his best games, as you mentioned. So look, I think he's been a really good pickup. And when you look at his season so far, he's been pretty consistent too. So he's holding Tom Nichols in the reserves. Daniel Curry's in the reserves as well. Can't get in. So he's been a really nice pickup for Gold Coast. And he's that big-bodied ruckman who can find a little bit of the footy around the ground, but also provide a physical presence as well. He was a big reason why they won the game yesterday.
Adelaide defeating St Kilda by 57 points. Been disappointing the Saints this year, haven't they? I think everyone expected that they'd probably be a top eight and that they would really pick up, but that just hasn't worked for them.
No, their last three weeks have been disgraceful, really, the way that they've gone about their footy. Does it coincide with Nick Riewoldt being out of the side? You'd hope not from a St Kilda point of view, but the stats don't lie. I think they've won one of their last nine now without Nick, and their percentage, I think their average losing margin or their for and against is something like minus 40 when he doesn't play. So it really does start to stack up. And problem is when you're relying on a 34-year-old, it's not overly healthy, I wouldn't have thought. So they just got belted in midfield and off half back. Adelaide were able to get that slingshot game going. Jake Lever, again, outstanding. Rory Laird, outstanding. And unfortunately for St Kilda fans who remember Tom Lynch when he was on their list, he was the best man on the ground the other night. And I think there's a lot of people questioning what happened there. But Tom was playing loose man in defence at Sandringham when he was at St Kilda, and they couldn't quite find a role for him because he didn't quite suit the way the game was being played. He's really flourished with the evolution of the game since he's moved to Adelaide. And he's just a hard worker who finds a way to get his hands on the footy and impact games. But, yeah, the Saints have got some real issues. And when you look at what they've got coming up, they've got to get things right really quickly because, yeah, there is a spot in the bottom half of the eight there open because no one really wants to grab it at the moment. The Bombers, I guess, are the ones who have jumped up last night and said, hey, we want a part of this. But, yeah, it's really disappointing from a St Kilda point of view at the moment when we were talking about them a couple of weeks ago about potentially, and I know KB threw it out there, potentially winning a flag or one of the chances to win a flag. And since then, the train has well and truly gone off the tracks, and they've got to find a way to turn it around really quickly. And it's got to be with their midfield because that's where it's really starting to hurt them at the moment.
Just mentioned Witts before and how he influenced the game. I thought Sam Jacobs was absolutely outstanding. When he's up and running, he's a real barometer for Adelaide Crows.
Yeah, he was, Zanners. And I guess he was in the first sort of 6 weeks of the year where they were beating everyone by 10 goals. And he was one of the main reasons why, though he was the clear All-Australian ruckman at that point of view. At that time of the year. And then had a couple of down weeks against Melbourne and North and sort of followed that on the next few weeks as well. But on Thursday night or Friday night, he was back to his best, and look, I thought Billy Longo toiled away in the ruck against him, but it was around the ground when Jacobs really got a hold of him. So he was able to give first use to his midfield, but also then find a way to impact the game around the ground. I think that's the challenge for ruckman now, like Brody Grundy and guys like that are finding the footy at ground level and being involved on transition. You can't just sort of stand in the centre square and hit the ball down and then do nothing else for the rest of the day. That sort of doesn't wash anymore.
Sydney and the Western Bulldogs started off the round. It was a 46-point win to Sydney in front of about 275 people. Jeez, it looked bare up there at the SCG, didn't it?
There wasn't many there, was there? But Thursday night in Sydney not going that well. Yeah, it probably all stacks up there where the supporters, we know that. And that's what it's like, I think. And that's what, I think, was it Paul Roos or someone else has spoken about it in the past, why Sydney can't afford to bottom out just based on the performance of the market. But unfortunately for Sydney supporters who didn't go, they missed probably their best performance of the year. They were outstanding against the Dogs. And the Dogs have got some problems at the moment with the way they're going about their footy. And they've certainly fallen back into that ruck of those teams who are trying to find a spot in that lower part of the eight. And I think they find themselves out of the eight at the moment. The Bullies, the reigning premiers. But the Swans, yeah, really good. And midfield, Hanbury, Kennedy, Parker, that's generally where it starts. I thought Papley was really good again the other night. And down back, they were really strong defensively as well. So that was their best game, I would have thought, for the year. And they still are a danger when you look at it and you think, oh, we're coming up against Sydney this week from an opposition point of view. And some people will certainly make the case that they can still win the flag because I think outside of GWS, really, no one's put their hand up. Like, Giants, I don't think, have got too many holes in their game, but everyone else has got plenty. So the Swans are just one of those teams who've got plenty of holes at the moment. If they can get it right, well, they're certainly in the mix. But the problem is they've given themselves too much of a job to do. I would have thought they're coming from a long, long way back and they're going to rely on teams around the bottom half of the eight falling over and hoping to try and slide their way in, probably with 11 wins or something like that.
After an injury-interrupted start to the season, it was great to see Isaac Heaney find plenty of the ball, and he's a very good ball user and he's got the footy smarts.
Yeah, exactly. Look, as you would have seen the other night, he's moved into midfield that they made last year. It's sort of been a bit on and off this year with, as you mentioned, his injury issues. And probably his form hasn't been quite where we wanted to see it, but I thought that was clearly his best game the other night. And just his ability to get on the outside and provide that link between defence and attack is something that Sydney's probably missed this year. And it's where part of their midfield has really fallen down. They've become too conscious or too inside dominant rather than being able to have that spread between inside and out. And I think that's where teams have really got them. They've been able to compete with them on the inside, but then on the outside's where that they've been able to expose the Swans. But Heaney back at his best form certainly goes a way to remedy that situation. And he was really strong there. And I really enjoyed the way that they went after Jason Johannesson physically the other night.
Yes, yeah.
I think he's not the one that you would sit there and think off the top of your head that you would go and target in terms of a tag or anything like that, but it certainly did the trick. He didn't look interested for much of the night, and it robbed the Bulldogs, with Rob Murphy being out as well, of any flow off halfback and any rebound. And look, he's obviously crucial to their side, Johannesson. We saw on grand final day last year the impact that he had, and it was a really interesting move from John Longmire, and one that certainly paid off. He just got no support, Johannesson, around him, and he was left to fend for himself. And there's quite a few Bulldogs on the night who had poor nights, so they'll bounce back. They're a good side, and they just need to find some consistency, because at the moment that's something they don't quite have. They've got elements of their game working, but when you look at it overall, they haven't been quite able to string it all together.
Get your thoughts on the remaining two games quickly, Brett, before we say goodbye. Carlton and GWS today. Of course, our SEN game kicks off at 3:20, and then it's the Demons and Collingwood tomorrow in that fantastic MND match, Freeze MND game for Neil Danaher, also at 3:20. That game kicks off as well.
Yeah, looking forward to getting Etihad today to be part of the commentary team with the boys, and watching the Blues and also the Giants go about it. I really like the way the Blues are defended for much of the year, but on a fast deck against GWS, it's going to be a real challenge for them. And their ability to kick a winning score is going to be the big problem, I think, for Carlton today. But seeing GWS and Josh Kelly in the flesh, the way he's going, will be really exciting today for footy fans, I think, who can sit back and watch the only game on a Sunday and work out whether a bloke's worth $1 million a year. Well, on his current form, he certainly is. So that's going to be good. And tomorrow, obviously, always a massive day. And from a Melbourne point of view, looking forward to seeing how that goes. But the wood over the Pies in recent times with their last three. And Bernie Vince's, I think he's got 11 of 12 Brownlow votes against Collingwood in his four games for Melbourne. So he's the one they're certainly going to have to watch. But a great day, great cause for... really great human. Had the pleasure of working with Neil Danaher for a year, and there's not too many people, better people on the planet, and the way that he's fought this has been sensational and a real testament of his character. So I reckon it'll be a close one. Both teams have got key injuries. Obviously, Hogan and Gawn out, but I think the Wells and Elliott omissions for Collingwood are going to really hurt them. So hopefully Pasolo can come back and kick a few goals, and they can see, I guess, the future with Callum Brown coming in. A great story, son of Gavin, making his debut on a massive day.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for your time as always, Brett. We'll do it again next week.
No worries, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Brett.
Brett Anderson from SEN Inside Football just looks at the game beautifully for us, doesn't he, Zanners?
He is the oracle, Shebex. There's nothing the BA doesn't know. He's tremendous.
All right, take a breath. Go through your notes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to speak to Brett Phillips. Plenty of tennis action happening.
On 11:16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeke. Hey!
27 minutes past 9 here on 11:16 SEN. We should also mention that Lewis Hamilton will start from pole position for the Formula One Grand Prix over in Canada. A beautiful qualifying session for him. Unfortunately, with Daniel Ricciardo starting behind his teammate in, I think, around about 7th place for Daniel Ricciardo. So Lewis Hamilton to start from pole position. Been heaps of sport around this weekend, hasn't there, Zanners?
Absolutely, Shebex. And I tell you what, the French Open could be at the top of the wazza.
Yeah, it could be too. This is a French Open update for Jets 24/7 Fitness. No locking contracts with 48 gyms in Victoria and 250 gyms worldwide. Head to jets.com.au as we head to Brett Phillips, our SEN tennis commentator. G'day, BP.
Shebex, Zenners, lovely to join you on a very fresh Sunday morning.
Oh, you don't know how good it is for me to join you, mate, after what was happening in that first hour or so. Anyway, that's another story, technical-wise. Mate, the French Open coming to the business end.
Well, look, it's an unbelievable tournament, Shebex. And how about the unbelievable winner we've had in the women's side of the draw last night? And we love a feel-good story. I mean, 2016 was littered with them. We've always talked about, certainly heading into this tournament and right throughout the year, the openness of women's tennis. But Yelena Ostapenko has just reeled off a lot of firsts overnight. Exactly. Flying the flag, Shebex, for Latvian tennis. Only my man... Only my man Ernest Gulbis, the man with the biggest wingspan in the game, he made the semi-finals of Roland Garros a couple of years ago. But Ostapenko, she'd never won a tour title. She'd never gone beyond the third round of any major previously. The first unseeded woman to reach to win at Roland Garros since 1933, and she was born in the same year as Gustavo Kuerten, of course, who won the French in 97. He'd also never won a tour title heading into that great victory at Roland Garros, and went on to win win three in a row and become an absolute legend on the clay. So we've sort of rewound the clock when, you know, Martina Hingis and Monica Seles and a few others were winning at a young age. Yelena Ostapenko, 54 winners, blew Simona Halep off the court last night, who had just the 8 winners. Darren Cale, her coach, of course, the Aussie connection, she was in a great position, 6-4, 3-love. She also led 3-1 in the third, so she had her chances. But Ostapenko, her firepower off both wings, a huge 2 weeks for her, and, well, it's put her into new lights.
Just recently turned 20 years of age, and the streets of Riga, there'd be mass celebrations, I'd imagine, BP. But Simona Halep had a lot to play for, obviously, yeah, the French Open crown, but also the number one ranking.
Yeah, she did, certainly, Zanas. And look, she's, you know, she's close. She's amongst, you know, a group of women who, you know, may get to number one and never win a major. I mean, we go back to Wozniacki and Yankovic. Ivanovic managed to win a French back in 2008. Didn't do a lot after that. Couldn't really maintain her status at the top of the women's game. She's been obviously given a great tribute at Roland Garros, having retired in the last 6 months. But yeah, Simona's got the game. She's not big in stature, very similar sort of to a Justine Henin, little pocket rocket. Didn't have the firepower that Ostapenko had and was made to pay in the end. And yeah, she'll be left wondering whether she'll get another chance, because, you know, Sharapova's going to come back, Azarenka's going to come back. We know Serena's going to come back, and it just gets a bit harder.
We talk about names of people that we don't really know in the tennis world at the moment winning things. Well, there's an Aussie boy that won the boys' singles that I hadn't really heard of before either, BP, Alexei Popyrin.
Yeah, look, Shebex, we had him on the first serve about 2 weeks ago, and we were going through the junior rankings, and he's our number one ranked boy. We thought we'd better get in touch with him, and it was actually on the day that he played the final of the Italian Junior Open. He spoke to us 3 hours before playing that final. He's won that, and he's gone on to win Roland Garros. So we're taking all the credit on the first serve, let me tell you. In fact, he's going to join us live from Paris a little bit later on tonight, so we can actually congratulate him on air. Look, it's a great story. He's born in Sydney, but he's hardly lived in Australia. Really, he's grown up in Dubai and Spain, has honed his game on the clay. He's the son of Russian immigrants who moved to Sydney many, many years ago. And he's big in stature, and his aim now is to try and play, you know, Davis Cup tennis for Australia. So it's a great story. 18 years of age, he steamrolled his way through the field. Now, first Aussie boys winner at Roland Garros since Phil Dent all the way back in 1968.
That's an incredible stat, BP. What's the key to Alexei's game? Is it a great serve, forehand, yep, backhand? Where's his strengths?
Yeah, it's the 1-2 punch, Zenas. He's a big boy, really big in stature. He's got a massive serve and follows that up with a great forehand. So he's able just to blow his opponents off court. And his last month of tennis, he's hardly dropped a set, and he's looked absolutely outstanding. When we spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, just got a great head on his shoulders, very wise young man. And one we're going to keep a very close eye on. His ATP ranking, which, you know, last year a junior, so it's well down, is 1,039. So he's just on the way, but this will propel him hopefully to another level.
All right, let's look forward. Oh, actually, we should mention too, Ash Barty and Casey Delacqua in the women's doubles finals tonight. What a great effort, yep, by those girls.
Yeah, look, fingers crossed they can get it done, although they've got a tough assignment, Shebex. They're taking on the number one seeds, Bethany Maddox-Sands and Lucy Safarova, who are an awesome duo and have had a lot of Grand Slam success in the last 12 to 18 months. But they're due, because they've made the final of all the other three majors. This is the one they hadn't made the final of back when they were pairing up in 2013. They lost all three of those. We know Ash took time away and went and played cricket, and Casey had her injury issues. They've come back together. And the last all-Aussie pair that actually won at Roland Garros, or won a major, was Margaret Smith, as she was known then. Of course, going on to be Margaret Court, and Judy Tegart. We're going all the way back to about 1966. So maybe some history to be made, but they're going to have to put on their best tennis, because Maddox-Sands and Safarova are going to be pretty tough to beat.
And for tonight, mate, absolutely looking forward to this one. Rafa looking for the Bo Derek of French Opens, number 10.
Well, he doesn't get beaten in French Open finals, Zenas. As we know, he's been the red-hot favourite. I think everyone would love to see him win 10. I tell you what, though, if there's one man that might be able to knock him off, one of my favourite commentators on the ATP Tour is Robbie Koenig, the South African. We had him on the first serve. What a great guy. he describes Vavrinka as going nuclear. So when he winds up, he stroke play, his speed of shot, which was much better than Andy Murray the other night, he is able to just, you know, put the afterburners on and just turn it up. So he could really take it up to Nadal, but the way Raf has played, I mean, he has been absolutely outstanding, and I would think he's going to get his 10th Roland Garros title tonight. We're going to have a full preview. We'll be on tonight, 10 o'clock, the first serve in the hour lead-up, 11 o'clock start over there in Paris tonight, and we'll go to Leo Schlink on the ground and a few other reporters to really set the scene.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for your time, BP. Look forward to speaking to you during the Wimbledon Championships.
Indeed. Thank you, gents. Have a great day.
Thanks, BP.
Brett Phillips joining us here, talking a little bit of tennis. Troy, we'll take a break. When we come back, we've still got some cricket, NBA, netball, and other things to come as well.
On 1116 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Welcome back, folks. And I've got a little hot tip for you as well, too. Nick and the team down at Northern Motor Group Spundura are holding a massive six-day sale. Starts this Tuesday. It's a whopping $27 million stock clearance across Nissan, Kia, Jeep, Chrysler, Isuzu Ute and Fiat. And that's six big brands heavily discounted over six huge days at the Northern Motor Group in Bundura. Unbelievably low finance across all models and 10 years warranty and roadside assist on all cars. That is amazing. Hurry down to Northern Motor Group. Bundura's massive six-day sale ends 5 p.m. Monday the 19th of June. Grimshaw Street in Bundura, LMCT 6595. It's been a disastrous week or so for our cricket team, Zanners. And to tell us more about it, Joe Barton from Fox Sports Cricket joins us on the line to have a chat. G'day, Joe.
How are you, guys?
Well, not too bad. Better than, I suppose, the Australian cricket team, who never really got a chance to do anything in this tournament, did they, due to weather?
Not the ideal tournament over the three games. Two washouts, and then even last night the rain came and said hello, and they said goodbye pretty quickly. Ben Stokes did a number on them, and Owen Morgan, of course, as well. But not a great tournament all round, really.
An incredible performance by Stokes, and living up to his IPL price tag there, no doubt. 102, 13 fours and two over the fence off 109 balls. An incredible performance.
He's the $2.8 million man for a reason. and, mate, he looked sensational last night. Coming in, I think England was 3 for 35 and in all sorts. And Stokes almost got out LBW in the first couple of balls. Just had one pitching just outside leg, but after that, after the rain delay, he came out, was aggressive from the word go. As you say, 13 fours, two sixes, and looked every bit the superstar that he is. He's the best all-rounder in the world, and Australia had no answers for him. Every tactic they tried, he was better than. So he looks like he could potentially be the player of the tournament. It makes England very much.
So was England
for the title.
England 4 for 240, defeating Australia 9 for 277. They won by 40 runs under the Duckworth-Lewis system. And Glenn Maxwell, gee whiz, wasn't he out on a classic catch?
It was a ripper. I mean, you kind of see these almost every other game these days, but this was one of the better ones. Jason Roy on the boundary managed to take one about a foot above his head, and then to avoid overbalancing and going over the rope, he's flicked it up in the air, gone outside the field of play, come back in. His glasses actually fell off his head, and there's some speculation that might mean that it counted as a six, but he did a brilliant job and managed to reel it in, probably the catch of the tournament to date.
Joe, the third umpire certainly earned his money on that decision.
Well, I think it was Shane Warne who was talking about it in commentary, saying the glasses could count as a six, but the third umpire managed to work out the rules correctly and also saw that the millimetre-perfect footwork just inside the rope. So big ups to the man upstairs there.
I thought
no doubt about it.
The key moment of the game,
Troy.
4 for 239 after the 43rd over, 9 for 277. They just capitulated, didn't they, after the 43rd?
Well, they lost, I think it was 5 for 15, starting with that Maxwell dismissal. Then you had Wade, Stark, Cummins all going cheaply. And I think part of it showed that, I mean, this Australian team from basically the second wicket or third wicket down hasn't had a bat at all this past 2 weeks. The second warm-up game was washed out. Basically the only batsmen who got a run in the first two games were the top four. And it looked like most of the guys who came in were chasing quick runs, weren't used to the conditions. And I think that definitely worked against them. And, of course, Adil Rashid was bowling quite well. And as a result, 5 for 15. And a total that looked like it was going to be 300-plus went to 277, which always looked about 50 or 60 runs short.
Joe, I suppose the real worrying thing for Cricket Australia on this one is, have we seen the sign of what we're going to see over the Australian summer?
You'd hope not. England is definitely a fantastic one-day team. At the moment, they've changed up their approach and play super aggressively, bat deep. But it's not the same as their test team. They don't play the same way in test cricket. And Australia, of course, a different beast on home soil. And I think we're all very excited to see the likes of Cummins and Stark and Hazelwood and potentially Pattinson, on the bouncy green decks at the Gabba and the like, as opposed to some of the flat wickets which we've seen tossed up this tournament. But I'd still be backing Australia to have favouritism going into the Ashes for sure, if and when there is a team to take the field.
The one positive to take out of the game, Travis Head, 71 not out. I thought he batted beautifully.
He was outstanding. And again, he was batted through that period where everybody else was falling around him, kept it together, and probably is the difference between Australia getting 240, for example, and actually ending up with 277. He, what was it, 71 off 64 balls, hit a couple of sixes, I think 5-4. So he looks a class act at international level and definitely looks a part and potentially could be forcing his way into the test team in the future next year or two.
Appreciate your time this morning, Joe. Thank you for looking at the game for us.
No dramas. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Barton from Fox Sports Cricket Australia, losing pretty much the only game that they really played in this tournament, isn't it, Troy?
Yes, they had a very bad run with the weather, Shebex. But
shocking.
Look, England, you've got to take your hat off to Ben Stokes. He really took the game away from him. 102 off 109 balls and dispatched the ball to all parts of the ground.
Yeah, you certainly did. Take a break, Troy, when we come back. A bit of NBA, because that is starting to hot up as well.
Oh, yeah.
The final series between the Cavs and the Warriors. And also we'll talk some netball as well.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Coming up 10 minutes to 10 o'clock, and it's a beautiful day up here at Winton Raceway for the third round of the 2017 Shannons Nationals. What's it like down there, Troy? Is it a little bit cold?
It's a little brisk, Shebex, but I tell you what, it is a great day to head down to Dunnison Fawcett, 111 Albert Park. It is where the stars align for fabulous food and wine. The five grains porridge, which you've sampled, absolutely superb. Mm. The eggs Benedict, ho ho ho. Maybe the French toast, ooh la la. Downing that with a beautiful coffee or a cold pressed juice. As I said, Shebex, do yourself a flavour favour. Get down to Albert Park, Dunderson Fawcett.
Good stuff. NRL results so far for the weekend. The Storm defeating the Sharks 18-13. The Knights losing to the Eagles, the Sea Eagles, 18-14 as well. A nice close game there. The Broncos 24-18 over the Rabbitohs. The Warriors 34-12 over the Titans. The Panthers 24-20 over the Raiders. And the Cowboys doing a number on the Eels 32-6. NBA finals are hotting right up. There is no doubt about it as we continue the final series. The Cavs and the Warriors. And, Troy, have you been getting into it?
I have, and, the Cavaliers hit back in a big way.
They certainly did.
With LeBron and Kyrie Irving, superb.
Carlin Gay from NBA Australia to tell us more about it. I think everyone thought, Carlin, this would be over in four, but at least we're going to a fifth now.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You guys have me over here wondering whether I should make French toast for breakfast, by the way. But in saying that, yeah, you're absolutely right. It was a wild game, to say the least, yesterday. It took a historic effort from the Cavaliers to just get one, and that kind of shows you how good this Golden State Warriors team is. I did say at the beginning it would be a five-game series, so I'm still right on track. I just want to put that out there and pat myself on the back
a little bit,
if that's okay, guys. But in saying that, you know what, there is some doubt in my mind as to whether or not the Golden State Warriors are in the right mindset to take over the series and end it in five.
Yeah, they really hit the scoreboard. Irving with 40 points, James 31, and Kevin Love he contributed 23 points. So when those three Pistons are firing for the Cavs, watch out.
Yeah, well, you know what? To be quite honest with you guys, those guys have been playing well through the entire series. It may not show it on the scoreline right now at 3-1, but they have been playing well. They have been getting that effort from Kyrie and LeBron and Kevin Love. But they haven't been getting it from Tristan Thompson. They haven't been getting it from J.R. Smith or Richard Jefferson until yesterday. Those guys stepped up in a major way, and finally the entire Cleveland Cavaliers team, you know, started to play well and started to show you why they were, you know, a championship contender. Finally, you know, they rose to the occasion. I don't know where Tristan Thompson was the first three games, guys, but he finally arrived, and he couldn't come at a better time. 10 rebounds yesterday, but it was more than just that. It was the energy plays that he played with. Richard Jefferson gave them 22 minutes off the bench, which is huge because with LeBron and Kyrie playing close to 41 minutes a game, they're not going to rest much, but at least when they're on the floor, they can take plays off and allow the other guys to, you know, make plays. So they're kind of sleepwalking through even though they're playing, which was good. And that's kind of what LeBron was able to do the first three quarters. He was kind of able to sleepwalk, feel the game out, and then at the end close it out, which he hadn't been able to do in the first three games.
The only time I saw Tristan Thompson in the first three games was when he hip and shouldered his teammate LeBron James and sent him in the next week.
Yeah. The NBA would be proud of that hit, wouldn't they?
No doubt about it. But the good thing is that LeBron got over that and has probably provided us with one of the buckets of the century so far. Talk us through that amazing move by LeBron James yesterday, Carlin, and how he was just about to be called for travel but then had the presence of mind to think about doing something else.
I'm laughing because I'm sitting here thinking to myself that even if I was to dream of doing that, I wouldn't be able to. So for me, it's
you couldn't think of it.
The super athlete does. I mean, he always finds a way to amaze us, doesn't he? That's just him. At age 32, you know, when most of us are kind of slowing down, it seems like he's picking back up. And, you know, he's an incredible athlete. To see that play in real time and then watch it on replay again and again and again and realize that what he just did in the middle of a finals play for his presence of mind to be able to hang in the air that long, throw it off the glass, and then say, oh, you know, no one else is going to get it. I'll go get it myself. And then in the process, dunk on his own teammates. That just shows you how bad he wants it. And that play right there is indicative of the fact that the Cavaliers could have laid down, they could have rolled over, they could have get swept, but they chose not to. They chose to fight back. They chose to punch. And, you know, that's the reason why we have a game five.
It's a huge mountain to climb, Carl, and no team has escaped a 3-0 deficit to win an NBA playoff series. But the Cavs, they made the greatest NBA finals comeback last year from 3-1 down to beat the Warriors. So it's going to be a fascinating fifth game.
Yeah, it really will be. And it was funny watching the game yesterday. It was really. I know the UFC is having their big pay-per-view today, but that was a UFC, you know, battle. It was very physical yesterday. You know, that third quarter took forever to go through because, you know, every second the whistle was blowing, and you go online and you know, everyone's talking about conspiracy this and that and all this hurt. But you look at the foul count, guys, and it was only 27-24 in favor of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, you know, that just shows me that, you know, it was more than just the refs that affected the Golden State Warriors yesterday. You know, a team shoots 24 three-pointers, regardless of whether the refs blow the whistle your way or not. That's going to be tough to beat. And you score 86 points in a half. That most teams in the 90s probably would be happy with that total for an entire game. So that's going to be tough to beat as well. And, you know, the Curry and, you know, Klay Thompson really didn't play. They didn't play well at all. And the Warriors were horrible from three-point range. So they can look at themselves in the mirror, I'm talking about the Golden State Warriors, and say, we didn't play our best basketball. And the Cleveland Cavaliers finally did play their best basketball and were able to get a victory. So going back home, they should be confident, the Warriors, and saying that we were in this position before. Mentally, we'll be able to be better. We have a better team than we did a year ago. Let's close this one out and get it over with. But if they don't, we're talking next weekend about a game seven. I promise you that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look forward to talking to you then, Carlin. Thanks for your time this morning.
Appreciate it, guys. You have a great weekend.
Carlin Gay joining us from NBA Australia. To wrap up, let's talk some netball. We've got two grand finalists now all ready to go next week. And Michael Hutchinson from Netball Scope joins us. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, guys.
It is going to be the Giants up against the Lightning after the Giants, did Melbourne Vixens yesterday.
Yeah, they did. They got off to a good start and really never looked back. Vixens, look, a lot of things went wrong, probably their worst game of the season, and that's certainly not something I'm sure they would have wanted in a prelim final.
And Christina Bryce, she certainly had her eye in with 42 from 45.
Yeah, look, it's only Christina's second full game for the season, and her last one was last week. So she's certainly got the touch now. The Giants look a lot more comfortable in attack with Susan Pettit at wing attack. And, that high ball into her last night was incredibly hard to beat. The Giants didn't give away a lot of ball in their attack end, which the Vixens would have appreciated a bit more, I'm sure. But there were a few chinks in the Vixens' armour that the Giants exposed.
So it was a 65-57 victory by the Giants netball over the Melbourne Vixens. In their first year to make a grand final, that's a super effort.
Yeah, it is. But you've got to look at the calibre of players they've got too. Beck Bullies,
for sure.
A former World Cup champion. And she's been to Commonwealth Games. Also, Serena Guthrie and Joe Harton have been with the English Roses for many years, and Susan Pettit's been around for well over a decade. And the coach too, Julie Fitzgerald. She's been coaching at the elite level for some 20-plus years at the minute. So no real surprises that they made the top four, but with Kim Green having that injury early this year, it was really dependent on how well they were able to cover that wing attack position, whether they were able to make the final, but they've got there.
And, just like their footy team, Troy, they had 10 number one draft picks, I think, the netball side.
Yeah, they're going okay, the GWS Giants. But an interesting comment. Vixens coach Simone McKinnis said it had been clear from the start her players were not in the game. That's a damning comment.
Yeah, it is. But knowing Simone from the many press conferences I've been to, she's quite a matter of fact. And you could see right from the first quarter that they were struggling. And the Vixens got a bit of a jump on and didn't really let them back in the game. So as much as the Vixens didn't play well, the Giants didn't allow them to. And I'd probably go as far as saying the Giants might even go into the next week's grand final as favourites on the back of their past 2 weeks.
Good on you, Michael. Thank you for your time. Appreciate that. Let's have a chat again next week and have a look at what's going to be a spectacular grand final between the Giants and the Lightning.
No worries, guys. Make sure you tune in Channel 9, 7 o'clock next Saturday.
Thanks, Michael.
That'll be the place to watch it. Michael Hutchinson joins us from Netball Scope. Well, Xander, that pretty much wraps us up, knowing that we've got footy today coming live from Etihad Stadium. Carlton and GWS, Andy Maher, Matty G, Nick Del Santo, Spud, Brett Anderson and Rowan Conley all on air from 12 o'clock. And, of course, the massive game tomorrow always is now. It's turned out to be a ripper, this Melbourne and Collingwood clash, hasn't it, on the Queen's birthday?
Absolutely, Shebexon, for a tremendous cause too. And hats off to Neil Danaher. He's a great man.
Well, hats on to Neil Danaher. Especially
hats on to Neil. Well done, Shebex.
Good on you, Zanis. Well done to you, mate. Thank you for bearing with us in what looked like you might have been hosting the show by yourself there for a sec. But we got through it, and that's the main thing.
We did, mate. And have a great Sunday.
Thank you, mate. I will, and we'll talk to you next week. I'll be in Darwin next week.
Darwin. Gee whiz, do you get around the frequent flyer points for the Shebexter?
Yes. Looking forward to it, mate.
I'll look after you.
Thank you. They do. Exactly do. Troy Zantuck joining me in the studio. Tony Shebeke signing off. Mark Fine and Adam Cooney coming up after 10 o'clock with Inside Footy. And then, as we said, live footy from 12 o'clock. Carlton and GWS from Etihad Stadium. I'll catch you next week. Till then.